Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, 304, 1 hour down. Two more to go on this Football Friday. The last one for Giants and Jets for the year. It could be the last of a lot. It could be, although I don't think it will be, the last for Shane and Dable. It will be for a lot. It will be the last for Drew Locke. It will be the last for Olbrich as the head coach of the New York Jets, that's for sure. Could be the last game ever for Aaron Rodgers, who earlier in the week spoke more candidly and more just with a tone of finality to his words than I had heard him before. I know he's broached this subject before about, you know, not possibly not returning and this is the last game you could play and blah, blah, blah. So it's not like it's the only time he's ever spoken on the subject, but there was just something in his tone that makes me think there's a legitimate chance that Aaron Rodgers isn't coming back. I'm still crazy enough to think he should. I just don't see a better option for them. And when you take into the consideration of the cap hit, even if you draft the young quarterback, let Aaron Rodgers be here. I don't believe that Aaron Rodgers is the reason for the losing. I don't. He's not been the reason for the winning, obviously, because there hasn't been enough or any, really, four games. So, I mean, it's not like, believe me, I'm not telling you he's played well. I heard a caller to Keith say he's a top five quarterback in the league. If you look at the numbers, I don't need to look at the numbers. I don't think the numbers even say that, but I'm not even going to bother looking at that. He's not a top 15 quarterback in the league this year. That still makes him the best quarterback the Jets have ever had. He's still putting up numbers and throwing touchdown passes, the likes of which the Jets have never seen. I don't believe he's the reason they're losing, though. I don't believe he came to the New York Jets and created a culture of losing, or, you know, turned it into a circus even more than it was. I mean, he didn't come to a winning team and suddenly, you know, make it a disaster. Like, the Jets have been a freaking disaster forever. They have the longest playoff drought in professional sports. He didn't come here and uplift the Jets like I thought he would. Totally agree. But if you're talking about next year, if you get competent head coaching, and whatever the case may be, whoever they hire, and they just interviewed, they finished Lewis Reddick for the GM position. Now, I think he's a smart football guy. I do. I think he would be an okay hire, or let me put it this way. I think he'd be a good hire for another franchise. I would rather see someone with experience for both head coaching and GM. I would rather have someone who's done the job before to come in here and deal with Woody Johnson. So I think Lewis Reddick is a fine candidate for almost any other team in football. I don't know if I'd hire him if I'm the Jets. I'm looking for a little bit more. I'm looking for experience in both departments, head coach and GM. But I don't think Rodgers came here and made this an unwinnable situation. I don't think he came here and like. And I also think that him and Zach and Russell Wilson, rather not Russell. I said Zach and Russell. Garrett Wilson. I don't think him and Brian Wilson, lead singer of the Beach Boys, I don't think him and Garrett Wilson can't have their relationship repaired. I know that some of the reports, like, I think Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams, who I'm sure he'll try to force a touchdown to get his 500 touchdown on Sunday against the Dolphins, I think he was grasping for straws and struggling to find success on possibly his last year in the NFL, and said, screw it, I'm going to go with the guy I know I have a rapport with and a relationship with. And over the last few weeks, no doubt, he's been looking for Davante Adams more than he's looking for Garrett Wilson. And moving forward, that needs to change. But I don't think that's anything that can't. And I think if you get legitimate leadership in this room, and again, I think if they kept Robert Saleh, maybe this wouldn't have been what this became. Because, you know, Ulbrich is a disaster. Like, even to the point where, like, things that people are getting on Rodgers for now, like the idea that Rodgers took himself, the idea that Rodgers took himself out of the lineup the other day. Oh, he gave up on the team. He quit on the team. They're down by 40 points. The coach should have taken him out. Rodgers saying, you know, at some, I just turned to someone. I said, hey, shouldn't, you know, like, yes, of course someone should have tapped you on the shoulder and said, sit down, we're going to play Tyrod Taylor. Of course, if there was a legitimate head coach who wasn't afraid to make that decision on the sidelines, you wouldn't have to say it. And he wouldn't have to say it. And I don't view it as quitting. That's absolutely what should have happened. He should have been taken out of the game. Why are you going to risk hitting him and hurting him? Play Tyrod Taylor in that spot. It's obvious. But they don't have a real coach on the sideline, so Rodgers had to do it. And now, oh, he's a bad guy, and he gave up on the team, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Okay. If they get an actual coach in there, and Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams and Garrett Wilson, and this team that is clearly not as good as I thought, zero Pro Bowlers, but I still think it's a talented roster enough to compete. To compete. In the AFC and in that division. I still believe that. And as far as I'm concerned, that's what they should be trying to do next year. So if it were me, I would bring back Aaron Rodgers. I would try and go at it again next year with a legitimate head coach. I would move heaven and earth to try and bring in Vrabel. If there are certain coaches, if Vrabel wants the job and says, well, I can't have Aaron Rodgers, then yeah. Listen, Vrabel will be the future of the team. He's the premier head coach out on the market right now. If that's the case, then I'm singing a different tune. But I don't think it's that unappealing for him to come in here and think he can play and win with Aaron Rodgers for 1 year. And if it doesn't work, then you begin a rebuild that you have control over. Like, hey, give it one shot to win with Aaron Rodgers. If not, You're our guy. I'm going to give you a give him a 10-year contract if it's Vrabel. I know that's hyperbole, but you get it. I'd give him a big-time contract, tell him he's in control. You get 1 year with Aaron Rodgers while maybe we draft a young quarterback or we start the rebuild. You bring in another guy to sit under Aaron Rodgers, and even to the point where if it goes poorly after a couple weeks, you move on from Aaron Rodgers and pull him. But I would think after he gets his mental break that he so desperately needs, another year removed, and he mentioned it too, it'll be an offseason where maybe he's not just rehabbing, that he's actually training and trying to get in good shape as opposed to rehabbing the Achilles. Maybe he'll actually be a little bit more healthy, even though he's a year older. I just don't see, I don't want to pay him all that money to go away. Because I don't see a better quarterback situation falling in their laps this year. But, and I'm not sure if he wants to play that. But I do find it funny. It's funny to me. And I think Sal referenced this today. I saw something on Sal. But, like, we were talking about this the other day with Keith. Like, he keeps referencing that this is the best 2 years of his career. Like, oh, the people I've met. The best 2 years of my career. Best 2 years of my life, he might have even said. I don't know. It's so funny because it's got to be the worst 2 years for any Jet fan. Like, it's got to be, right? And that's part of it, too. And maybe I'm hung up on stuff like this. Like, I'm hung up on, and I'm, you know, this one, my guy Al on Twitter is killing me for still sticking with Dable. Maybe I'm hung up on seeing things through. Maybe I am. Because in the case of Brian Dable, I feel like he was brought here to develop a young quarterback and oversee a rebuild. That's what I thought he was brought here for. And yet, you know, they gave him Daniel Jones. He found a way to win, and it ruined it. And now, as you're right there to possibly do that rebuild with a young quarterback, to move on from him feels like, well, now the last 3 years have been wasted. That's what it feels like to me. Well, now I've wasted this hire. I've wasted the opportunity to give Brian Dable a chance to do what Brian Dable does. I hired a guy for a specific reason. Or I shouldn't say that because I hired him to lead my football team. But I hired the guy because of a specific thing that he did. Him developing Josh Allen made him a candidate That's it. That's what made him a candidate. So, like, to go through a failed 3 years with him and never give him that opportunity, it feels like a waste. And the same thing with Aaron Rodgers. You brought him here to maybe, you know, to win a Super Bowl, sure, but to also just get the bad taste out of your mouth of all the losing and be a winning football team, even for a brief moment. And I feel like if you move on from Aaron Rodgers after 1 year when he had, you know, no coaching whatsoever, just absolutely zero, and you've got an owner and an organization that's a disaster, and they fire the coach halfway through the year. I mean, it just feels like the Jets got in the way. Now, Rodgers didn't help. Rodgers didn't help the Jets get out of their own way, and Rodgers added to the different things that helped get in the way of the New York Jets. No doubt, he was not a positive. He was a net negative on the season, to steal a quote from Gary Cohen. Net negative. But I still think I've seen glimpses where if you put the team around him, give him a legitimate head coach, a legitimate offensive coordinator, a legitimate game plan, that they could actually just compete and possibly end this streak. All right, maybe they'll never be the AFC championship team I thought they could be, or the Super Bowl team many thought could be. Maybe they'll never reach those heights. But I think they could win 9 or 10 games. I do. And I would rather see that than pay him $40-plus million as a cap, not pay him, but have a cap hit of $40-plus million to watch him play for someone else. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls. Stuart in Brooklyn. What's up, Stu?
Happy New Year, Chris.
Happy New Year, Stu. What's up?
But they keep Shane and Dable, and they don't get the quarterback. Then what do we do? Then what do the Giants do? Then we're going to have to go through the same circus all over again with a veteran quarterback? Is that really worth it?
Yeah, I mean, not to me. And that's why this game is so important, because if they're drafting eighth, then Vegas is in front of them, and Cleveland and Tennessee are in front of them, and
they're all going to draft quarterback.
I mean, listen, the Jets could theoretically draft a quarterback or look to move up and get a young quarterback in here. Like it's plausible. Like so, I mean, I don't think Jacksonville will. I don't think Carolina would.
No.
And obviously New England one wouldn't. But like, so Tennessee, Cleveland, the Jets, Vegas would all be in front of them.
Uh-huh. And so somebody was talking yesterday about the Giants making a trade with Minnesota for JJ.
Yeah, I don't.
Did you hear that?
Yes. No, of course. Yeah, listen, because now, and mm-hmm. Stu, thank you for the call, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, there's all kinds of theories, because here's the thing. If you don't have a quarterback, you need one. Plain and simple. So, yeah, now they could trade for J.J. McCarthy. They could, you know, Justin Fields. There's going to be all these kind of rumors on how they can get a younger kind of their guy quarterback. Now, J.J. McCarthy, I do think there's a couple of pros, but most of them are cons. The pro is he's already had the year of sitting and watching. Now, it's not because he was just holding a clipboard, but because he had two knee injuries. And I think I saw that Schefter referred to it as an ACL. I didn't remember that being reported. I saw Art Stapleton talk about the idea that it's always kind of just been a knee injury, and we weren't sure what it was exactly, but maybe I misremembered and I saw a couple tweets. But whether it's his ACL or knee injury, he's had two knee surgeries. He had a knee surgery, and then he had to go in and clean some things up during the healing process of the knee injury. So, like, he's had two knee surgeries already, but he has had an ability to watch an offense from the Vikings and O'Connell and watch, Sam Darnold run it. But O'Connell is a disciple of McVay. He is a very, very good coach and a very, very good offensive coach. That's why Daniel Jones chose to go there. It's a very it's a very productive offense. It's an offense that's got its roots oriented in many different teams around the league, because McVay is the offensive guru and his coaching tree is all over the place. And that offense, it's a copycat league. So much has been stolen from him and worked with him. So like the idea that he's in a disciple of McVay's offense, and O'Connell himself is a very good head coach. So it's a good offense to learn in, because it's a offense that's NFL. He's had a year to watch it. and understand it. And, you know, he was a decent prospect coming out. He was a guy who, if he were coming out this year's draft, he'd be, I don't know if he'd 100% be above Sanders and or Ward. He might be, but he'd certainly be part of a three quarterback situation right now, where people would talk about him being drafted at the top of the draft and people would talk about him possibly going number one. But the only issue is, one, like I said, two knee injuries, and two, the Giants, especially if it's Shane and Dable, if it's not Shane and Dable, and it's a coach and or a GM who did draft prep last year and loved J.J. McCarthy, but Brian Dable and Joe Shane passed on him. The Giants passed on him last year. They could have drafted him. They chose not to. And, you know, some of the rumblings around the team, and I heard Marash say this, and I heard some similar things. He really expanded on it, that they really didn't like him at all. And that he was like the last quarterback on their list, and they didn't think he had a strong enough frame to be an NFL quarterback, and he couldn't get through a preseason without tearing his ACL. So I don't think J.J. McCarthy would be the answer. And I don't know what they would want for him. I'm not giving up. I'm certainly not giving up. Like, if they're drafting eighth, they're not getting my first-round pick. You can forget that. You're not getting a first-round pick. You're not getting this year's first-round pick. You're not getting next year's first-round pick. I am not giving you a first-round pick. I don't even want to give them the second-round pick. If they want to take a third- or fourth-round pick for J.J. McCarthy, I would consider it, but I wouldn't feel that great about it. And I would be, if it's a fourth-round pick, I could still warrant drafting a quarterback next year with my top pick. It's like it's not out of the realm of possibility, but I don't love it as an answer. I don't like Justin Fields as an answer. I always like Sam Darnold, and it sounds like that's not going to be available. They're going to pay Sam Darnold the Vikings, but if they ever were like to bottom out here, like say they lose badly against the Lions and then they lose badly in their first playoff game and Sam Darnold doesn't play well, I suppose there's a chance they could move on from Sam instead of paying him the big money that he's going to get and stick with their draft pick of J.J. McCarthy. It's possible, especially if they feel they have a coach who can develop any kind of quarterback in O'Connell. So, like, I'd be willing to bring in – I like Sam, always have. I know New York wasn't a good place for him. That building is where he saw ghosts. I get it. I would be willing to give Sam a contract. He's still young enough, and that's kind of like another guy – like, I know it's not developing the young quarterback. At this point, he's a veteran, been around the league, played for multiple teams. He played for Carolina, played for San Francisco, now he's played for Minnesota. So it's not like developing a young quarterback, but he's still 27, 28 years old. And you just saw what he could turn into with a good offensive coach like O'Connell. I would take a chance on bringing him in here with Dable. And they're going to have money in the salary cap. I would be open to paying a quarterback if he was young and the future and I believed in him. Mike in Brooklyn. What's up, Mike?
Hey, C-Mac. Happy New Year, my friend.
How's everything going? Happy New Year to you. Good. Everything's all right.
Good. Yeah, no, it's funny when you were talking about the ID thing, because that night I stopped over to drop the cookies off you guys. I was like down, I stopped downstairs over there, and in the back, it's like Fort Knox. I'm like, can you possibly like bring these upstairs? The guy's like, no. I'm like, okay. I'm like,
I know, it's
so yeah, like hang on to him. I gave money. It's crazy, but I'm glad you had a nice Christmas and stuff.
Thanks.
Listen, I was listening to that. First of all, 97 Bowling Man. You might need bumpers, brother. Number one, the
Listen, 97 at one of three games. I was over 125 on the other two. I'm not even saying 125 is any great shakes, but I haven't been bowling in a long time.
Yeah. But as far as that Martino report before, he was talking about, I think he was on with Sal on SNY. I think Keith was talking about it before, and he said that the Yankees had a better offseason than the Mets. I totally believe that. I don't know if you remember, but you, Al, Hoff, I talked to all you guys, and I said, first of all, I didn't think that they were bringing Alonso back. All you guys are like, they're definitely bringing him back.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, I think that the only thing that we really got, we got better. Yeah, obviously Soto's huge, $800 million, but we got better at one position. If you look at the pitching staff, I think the pitching staff's actually worse. And I still cannot believe that we didn't get an ace. Like, and Burns got a lower AAV than Snell, even though we got one more year.
Yeah.
And I can't believe that we didn't go for one of these guys. We don't have an ace. We still don't have an ace.
No, he doesn't. Stearns doesn't believe in paying pitching like that. He doesn't believe in it.
The guy's 2 years younger. He's 30 years old. He's going to be 30, I think, almost 2.5 years younger than Snell. And so you give him 4 years at a higher AAV?
Well, the Dodgers are willing to do it. They don't have this hard and fast rule that the Mets have. Stearns doesn't believe in doing it, plain and simple. They weren't in on it. And I'm not saying he's right. I'm just telling you, Mike, that, like, to say I can't believe you didn't do it, and you're trying to justify the money between him and Snell, and thank you for the call, and thank you for those cookies. And the bumpers were up because I was bowling with my kids. And the lane didn't have the ability. We went to, sometimes the lanes have, like, you could put the bumper up for each individual player, and they'll come up and go down, come up and go down. We just went to the local bowling alley, and they was just up. But it's not like, it was a good deal. They don't believe in doing it, whether it was a good deal or not. And, again, if you believe reports, Arizona, the tax situation, he took less money to go to Arizona than he would have needed to take to play in San Francisco, for example, or to play in New York, for example. So the money might not have been the same. He took that contract because he's not getting income taxed on it. So, and he's got a house there. So I think there was there's reasons why he took that contract for that specific team. But I agree with, like, who had the better offseason between the Mets and the Yankees? I'm less concerned about that. It's just, did the Mets get better? Did the Yankees get better? I don't really care who had the better offseason between the two. The Mets added a unbelievable talent. They added one of the top five players, top three, arguably, players in Major League Baseball. I mean, top five for sure. But yeah, it's a crazy contract. We all agree. It's stupid. He's not worth that money. He's only worth it because someone's willing to pay him. I mean, if I were the Yankees, I wish they would have paid him the money. When I say he's not worth it, Jeff Passan kind of got killed from people saying it's not a good baseball move. It's not. It's not. I mean, listen, we can call him generational or whatever. He's not, Ohtani makes less, theoretically, in real money, with so much being, pushed down the line. In real money, Ohtani makes less money. He shouldn't make less money than a guy who hits and pitches. And Ohtani, you could argue, is a better offensive player. You could argue. It's right there, but you could argue it. And he bitches. Like, the Ohtani, he doesn't deserve that contract just for the player, as much as I love him as a player. And I'm not saying the Mets were wrong in giving it to him. I wish the Yankees would have ponied up more to get him. He's worth what he's worth. He's worth what he got paid. But it's a bad baseball move. But still, they're great. Like, they got a great player. The Mets are probably still better. But the problem is they play in the National League. And I agree with you. Their pitching's not good enough. I think it is worse than last year. I know it's worse than last year. Because there is no way. Like, there is no way Frankie Montas is going to have the season that Severino had. Like, I'm sorry. I doubt it very much. And I doubt very much that Clay Holmes is going to, like, right out the gate, give you all these innings and be this good. Like, I love Clay. Clay's my guy. I sing White Horse once a day. I love that song. He's my guy. Every time Clay did, I was fighting so many people with the, that was like a personal issue with me, beating off the Clay defenders, the Clay haters. Like, that was my thing. But I don't know if he's just going to turn around and be a good starting pitcher. No idea. Like, you got so many great performances last year. And Manaea, maybe he's found something with this crossfire mechanics. I'm sure he has. But is he going to be as good as he was down the stretch of the season last year? And then who's the bullpen right now? Buto and Diaz, obviously. Is Diaz going to be the closer he was a couple years ago? He better be. And again, right now the American League stinks. The Yankees are much better off than the Mets are right now. Much better off. Are they the better team? I won't even say that. I don't know. We'll find out who's the better team, Yankees or Mets. I think it's comparable. But you could make a strong case the Mets are better, but that's they don't have to compete against the Yankees. They got the Yankees are competing against lesser teams while the Mets are competing against the Phillies, the Braves, the Dodgers, the Padres. I mean, the Yankees are competing against the Kansas City Royals and an Astros team that's not the same. And a division, forget about it. The Red Sox added some pitching, but that's it. The Baltimore Orioles have done nothing. They signed Tyler O'Neill. Maybe they're in for Jack Flaherty. We'll see if we get that signing. But they've done nothing. The Yankees are far better off. It is a much easier path for them to get to the World Series than the Mets. The Mets pitching isn't good enough. I totally agree. The Mets needed more pitching. I am not satisfied with the Mets pitching. Bullpen or rotation. It's not good enough. Now, listen, anything could happen. If I'm wrong and Montas gives you a great year and Clay Holmes becomes what they believe he is, then maybe it will be. But I find that after pulling off the magic trick that they were able to pull off last year with that rotation, you're going to do that twice without different guys? Like, good luck, man. I'll tell you right now, if Stearns is able to do this with a rotation, if he's able to get an ace in Kodai Senga, who barely pitched last year, David Peterson, who's coming off really the only really good. I mean, and he was good. He was great. But you're going to try and duplicate Peterson's one good year. You got Manaea, who, you know, had 2 years of floundering in Major League Baseball, who just had a resurgent year. And now you're going to give me Frankie Montas and Clay Holmes, and you're going to turn that rotation into a World Series caliber rotation. If Stearns does that after what he did last year, I will never question him again. That's it. And nor should Met fans. And who cares who doesn't sign? Who cares what long contracts he doesn't want to give or what aces he allows to hit elsewhere in the free agent market? Bravissimo. I mean, that is, if he does that, that's as good as it gets, man. I'd be very impressed with that. But I don't think they're good enough. The question is, are they, it's not about Yankees versus Mets. Are the Mets good enough to compete in the National League for a World Series? Compete, yes. Win? Are they anywhere close to the Dodgers right now? Look at that rotation. And you can't tell me the lineup, because the lineup, you see who the Dodgers have. Look at the rotation. You've got Kodai Senga, David Peterson, Frankie Montas, or Manaea, rather. So you got, Senga, Manaea, Peterson, Frankie Montas, and Clay Holmes against Yamamoto, Ohtani, Glasnow, Snell. It's not even close. And then the rotation has three Hall of Famers hitting 1, 2, and 3. I mean, the lineup, rather, has Hall of Famers hitting 1, 2, and 3. Like, they're not anywhere near as good as the Dodgers right now. They're not. Well, there's no one in the American League better than the Yankees. No one. We'll play the season and see what happens. But as of right now, heading into it, there's not a roster that's better than the New York Yankees. The Yankees have the best team in the American League. If they were in the National League, they wouldn't be good enough to compete with the Dodgers. But as of right now, until they get to the World Series, they don't have to. So it's not so much Yankees had a better offseason than the Mets. Who cares? Are the Mets better and are the Mets good enough? And are the Yankees better and are the Yankees good enough? And I think they're absolutely good enough to get to the World Series. I don't think the Mets are. And if they were in, I would say the same thing about the Yankees if they were in the National League. So it's not necessarily I'm saying the Yankees are better. If the Yankees were in the National League right now, I would say they're not good enough to get to a World Series. Just like I'm saying about the Mets. But they're not. They're in the American League. But the Yankees could obviously do better. And I did, as I was watching Paul Goldschmidt, I mean, it's been out there. It's been a possibility. And I've kind of said no to it. I've changed my mind. So we'll get to that as well. And there's another option, too, for the New York Yankees. And for the Mets, they're looking for a bat as well. I mean, both teams are looking, you know, Bregman's market. There's a lot to talk about with baseball because Bregman's market and then obviously Pete Alonso. There's a couple things for both the Mets and Yankees right now. 888-808-1019. We'll take a quick break. We can get into a little bit of baseball. We'll talk a little bit more football when we get back with the calls right here on a Football Friday. McMonagle with you until 5 o'clock in the morning. And the warm-up show on The Fan. So fresh and so clean, 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you, back in the overnights. Some will say it's where I belong. I'm okay with that. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls here. I've talked a little bit. We still have to get to the Saquon Barkley sleep commercial, which I don't know how else to take it, but shot directly to John Maron, the New York Giants. Now, is it malicious? I wonder if Saquon Barkley actually reached out to John Mara about it. But we'll get into that in a little bit. Let's get to the calls. Robbie in Lake Success. What's up, Robbie?
Happy New Year to you, my friend.
Happy New Year, buddy. How are you?
And I'm good. Two quick points. Number one point on the Yankees, but I'm really the Giant core.
Sure.
I think the Yankees right now are improved. They're going to the World Series. I can't see anybody else. I mean, you got to play the season, but you're right, sure. You're right about that. And it's going to be the repeat. Yankees with Dodgers. Right now, the Dodgers are better than the Mets. But it's not a baseball. I got thoughts on that, but I want to go into the Giants. Number one, I woke up to your thing on Sam Darnold. I've been preaching Sam Darnold since the draft of Barkley. I wanted him out of USC. Never happened. He bombed with the Jets. Mm-hmm. And we know what happened going forward. Here's my plan. I don't want to hear about the media. I want to hear what you have to say because I don't listen to anybody because John Mara is the man who makes the decision. I want these two guys out of here. Done. I am not wasting any more time. I don't believe in them anymore. They have completely failed, both of them. Period. My opinion, that's all. Next thing, you give Sam Darnold, he's arguably the top five quarterback right now in the NFL, between Allen and obviously Mahomes, and we can maybe throw a couple of the people in there.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Burrow, the guys.
I understand, top five. You know.
Somewhere around.
Whatever. You can't go into next year without a quarterback. You cannot go into next year. I don't know if these guys in the draft are going to get him anyway, mm-hmm. and I don't know if they can be. I don't even know if they're the guys I'd want. You got a proven NFL quarterback. He's having a sensational MVP-type season. He can carry you for 5 or 6 more years at least.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to hear anything about New York. He can't play. That's crap to me. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear any media. Oh, he's not a New Yorker. And as Flores, the coach, I want Flores in here, defensive-minded. And if he comes over here and he shakes Mary's hand and they make up, there's no more lawsuit anymore. I don't want to hear the media talk crap because they know nothing. The only one who knows is John Mara, and he might not even know. But what we can talk about is Sam Darnold, the future of the Giants possible. Now, if they franchise him, then obviously you can't get him. And then you got to go for the next level kind of a guy, a stopgap. But first and foremost, get rid of both today, Black Monday. I don't want them here. I don't want to hear 1-1. They're gone, period. They have failed. Then you get the new guys in here, whatever it takes. You try to get Sam Darnold. If it's not him, then you figure it out.
It's not even just the franchise. It's whether or not the reports are they love him. They're going to give him a contract.
Yeah, are you talking about Sam?
Yeah.
Well, you're talking about Minnesota. You're talking about,
yes,
right?
Yes. Yeah. The Vikings.
Well, then listen. If they're getting him a contract and he wants to sign with them, uh-huh. other than being franchised, which he has to sit out or take the money, then there's no choice. Then the Giants are out. But I would throw a boatload of money at him. They gave Jones all this money. He is the next shot because right now there's nobody. You have nobody on the horizon.
No, I know. That's why I wanted. That's why I'm so frustrated that they won the stupid game because.
Well,
I
understand that's all said and done, and I hope, you know, we can't go there. But Chris, what's your thought on Flores? With him,
I think it's tough for John Mara. That's a tough thing between those two parties. I mean,
the guy wants a job. Okay?
I know, but he accused them of running a sham and avoiding the and making a farce of the Rooney Rule,
you know,
which has implications to it.
I understand that, but if they make up, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but if they do make up and they say, listen, money and handshakes, look, Yogi made up with Steinbrenner. You know, and I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying I'm throwing out a name that I think.
I know. Listen, he's a great coach, and I think he's and thank you for the call, Robbie. I think he did a great job this year with that defense. He disguises blitzes as well as anyone in the NFL. I think he did a good job in Miami. I was surprised he was let go there. I think he would be a great hire for any team. I just think it's a tough thing when when lawsuits are filed and accusations are made and things like that. It's tough, but yeah, I would love him to be the Giants head coach if they move on from Brian Daboll. I don't view Brian Daboll and Joe Shane the same way you do. It's hard to say that they've been successful, certainly with the last 2 years. But again, as Brian Daboll said, this is what happens when you get good quarterback play. He hasn't had any good quarterback play. And part of that is Joe Shane, not only did they give Daniel Jones the contract, but they also didn't make sure there was a good backup this year. So it's on them. It's always on them. But at the same time, like, I just think if given a good opportunity, and again, this last draft was by far Joe Shane's best draft. I also think that if given good quarterback play, I think Brian Daboll's offense can work, and I think Brian Daboll can work as head coach. I mean, he did have the year. I mean, we can't just dismiss it. He's had 3 years, right? If you're being totally fair about it, in my mind, if you're being totally fair about it, he had 3 years as the head coach of the New York Giants. In year one, he dramatically overachieved. Dramatically overachieved. And it was him. Like, it had nothing to do with the GM. I mean, a couple of picks, obviously. But, I mean, it was mainly Gettleman's team. He dramatically overachieved and took a team to the playoffs and won a road playoff game and won coach of the year. The next year, it was a miserable start as well, but then he lost the quarterback to injury. They managed to win a couple of games. They beat a playoff team in the Green Bay Packers, who were on their way to the NFC Championship game before they blew it. Like, he beat a playoff team would end up being a playoff team with Tommy DeVito. Like, I don't know. And he lost his quarterback to injury halfway through. Like, let's call that an incomplete. And then he had this year, which was bad, but no good quarterback play. And he was forced to tell the entire team, we don't care about winning. It's about money. And next year, we got to get rid of our quarterback. Like, that's a tough thing to tell your team and then expect to continue to play well. Never mind the fact he lost Andrew Thomas. He lost Dexter Lawrence. Again, I'm not telling you he's done great the last 2 years. But I think you can make a case that Brian Daboll had one really good, really good overachieving season as the head coach of the New York Giants, and then two bad, but, because of the quarterback situation, somewhat understandably bad. Like, did it get uglier than you thought, even with the quarterback situation? Yeah, it got uglier than you thought. But, like, and then you add the infighting, you add the way he's minimized Kafka, you talk about obviously not being able to build a relationship or continue a relationship with Wink Martindale and having that go sour to the point where, he stands up and tells him to go F himself and walks out and goes to Michigan and did a great job there. I don't know. You can obviously make the case to fire him. I certainly don't feel the same passion that he's got to get the hell out of here the way you feel. Ray in Brooklyn. What's up, Ray?
Hey, Mac, listen, my Yankees family, I'm going to get to my Yankees point.
Mm-hmm.
But strategically, I'm going to leave it for last so we can mend fences on the Yankee topic.
Yes, I know.
After
I know how you feel about the coach. Yes,
also, I know. So listen, all right, I'm going to dispel a couple of things that just came out this week that make me just laugh and just lose my mind at the same time. So, the narrative now that since the Giants actually played out of their minds for one game, that's a clear sign that Daboll still holds the locker room and the guys play for him.
Yeah.
I already stated, I'm on record stating, listen, I mean, they lost 10 in a row. I can just attribute that to the Giants being due and Drew Locke literally playing for his football life, not playing for Daboll, and the guys playing for with it, right? I mean, you can't.
Well, yeah, but then because you said this to me the last time we spoke, man. I get it, but then no team under those circumstances. Then no team. Why would any team ever fade down the stretch if it's guys playing? Because every team has guys playing for their football careers. Every team has guys playing for money. They're professionals. Every team. Then how come there are teams that fold for their coach?
But they've
shown, like, it was the one really bad game against Tampa, and then, like, they didn't play well in the second half against Atlanta, but, like, they were fighting. They were a field goal away from sending a game to overtime against the Saints. I'm not trying to tell you it's the greatest thing, but they didn't just fall apart, and they played a great game. Like, they're still playing for him. Like,
let me say this.
I think that's fair to say they're still playing for him. I think that's fair to say that.
I don't think so, but we'll disagree to disagree. And I'll say this. I'll say the reason why. If he hadn't lost the locker room, why does he have his rookie wide receiver chewing gum like a cow in the locker room saying, oh, you don't ask me, ask Dable, and throwing the coach under the bus and everybody.
No, because he's frustrated. Because he's frustrated. Because they're losing.
But that's a clear. But he's not the only
is
one.
How's he talking now? Have you heard neighbors? I know, but have you heard neighbors after that game? How about they expect to win every game? Did you hear him this time around after he got two touchdown passes and after they won a football game? He sounds like a different player. He's frustrated with losing. If you watch Hard Knocks, they literally asked him, how do you handle losing? How do you handle not getting involved in the offense early? He said, coach, honestly, I don't handle it well. And they said, that's good. That's exactly what we're looking for. He's frustrated. He's losing. And he got mad and he spoke out. Like, I don't think that means he lost Dable.
That's not going to happen in a tightly knit room with a Mike Tomlin.
Totally disagree.
And guys of that
totally
nature.
Disagree.
But let me say this. As far as you keep bringing up the audio when he says, that's what happens when you get good quarterbacks.
Correct.
Well, that's another example of him not being self-accountable and throwing his players under the damn bus because, why can't you just take some accountability or give a
He does take accountability. Accident. Every single press conference, he says the same crap about it being on him. Who cares? Who cares? Like, he takes accountability every week, and we get on him for that. Oh, my, he says the same thing every week. Oh, it's on me. It's on me. What does that even mean anymore? Like, he takes accountability. He's telling you this is what happens when you get good quarterback play. Plain and simple.
But that's throwing his players under the
bus. It's sending a message to the owner. Who cares? It's sending a message to ownership. I need a quarterback. Yeah.
Yeah, but listen, a good coach and somebody, with any kind of accountability. He sounds like Joel Embiid.
Kind of,
but anyway, so let me say this about the Yankees, right? Let's get back on track here. Yeah. So as far as the Yankees are concerned, it sounds like you're coming around on the offseason. Because I know early on you said there's no kind of, no way to shape or mold a successful offseason after losing Soto.
Well, plan B, what? I don't know if I went that far. Plan B sucks. It's still not as good as having Juan Soto. You can't convince me otherwise.
Listen, if we're the favorite to go to the World Series and possibly win it, it can't suck that bad. And that's a good position to be in. But let me also say this. Like, listen, Keith did allude and play clips of Andy Martino and Sal Licata. Sal Licata, who, I have a good relationship with, but he doesn't have an objective bone in his body when it comes to evaluating the Yankees and the Mets. So I give, Martino, who works for SNY, tons of credit for setting him straight because the Yankees are a better team than they were last October. I don't even think that's debatable. And the fact that, people are saying
it's
stuff like, okay, all right. So as far as like people saying, that this guy Fried is overpaid, Mets people who just overpaid Soto, and gave him 15 years. I can argue with you that yes, maybe they gave him two more years than I would have liked, but the annual salary is only $27 million.
Right.
That's well beneath what Gerrit Cole signed for 36, 6 years ago? And this guy has a lower ERA the last 5 years than Cole. So right now he's a better pitcher than Cole. We're getting him at 27. That's a bargain. And
I agree with that. It's the years, not the per. You're right.
See, Mac, let me say this last thing, right? This whole stupid thing, this notion that people are saying that the Mets are this big family and that's why Soto went there because they treat their players like family. Well, ask Pete Alonso how he feels, and you can't tell me that other people, around the league are not looking at it and say, hey, That's a one-off with Juan Soto. We don't want to go there unless he grossly overpays us. We're not going there for this family mentality, which is false, because the original son of the New York Mets, Pete Alonso, who started the rebuild, the guy that they were marketing and building as better than Aaron Judge, is getting treated like dirt, not family, like dirt on the bottom of their shoes. And if he's got all his damn money, why can't he overpaying Pete Alonso a little bit?
Yeah, right.
I appreciate it, man.
And thank you for the call. I agree with some of that. I mean, you're probably a little strong with it, but I think your point is fair. It's tough to scream what a great environment and family, and we treat everyone like family. And it's not just Pete Alonso, it's also Jacob DeGrom. Because Jacob DeGrom is the greatest pitcher I've ever seen. All right, I wasn't around to see Sandy Koufax, Pedro Martinez for a longer stretch, clearly. But at the top of his game, I have never seen a pitcher better than Jacob DeGrom. He's the best pitcher I've ever seen. And they didn't want him back. And not only did they not want him back, they offered Max Scherzer more money. They offered Verlander more money. Now, they ended up being right. He got hurt. But it's tough to say family when a guy who is your own, who was your life, was your team, was the guy to the point where the fans are like, geez, I hope they trade DeGrom so he can go somewhere and win, because I'm tired of seeing him throw one run, not eight inning, one run, and lose 1-0. Like the fans, I took calls. I hope they trade him so he can go win. And they didn't offer him the contract. They let him go. And then the second he left, They started bad talking him and bad mouthing him. And, oh, he didn't want to be here. Oh, he didn't want to be here. He didn't like it here. His wife didn't like it here. Oh, he's going to go play for the Rangers. Like, I turned on SNY after he signed, and SNY was in full blown good riddance. Like, and now Pete Alonso means nothing to be a lifelong Met, means nothing to be the guy who came up with LFGM. Like, it's nothing to be the polar bear, it means nothing. But it's a great family environment. I think that's fair, right? I think it's probably, you know, I understand what they're talking about. I understand why they're doing it with Pete Alonso. His market's collapsing. You don't negotiate against yourself, blah, blah, blah. But if you're going to go on and on and on about what a great family it is, and once you're, you know, you're a part of it, you're one of us, and, you know, we take care of our own, and that's what families do, right? Well, yes, that is true. The two biggest names in recent history for the New York Mets have been Jacob DeGrom and Pete Alonso, and they have not been treated kindly. Now, Pete Alonso, it's not the end of the season, the offseason, and Pete Alonso hasn't signed anywhere else. So they have time to change that narrative, but right now it feels like, yeah, the two prodigal sons of the New York Mets in recent history, in the Steve Cohen era, have been Jacob DeGrom, and I know Jacob DeGrom obviously started before, and so did Pete, theoretically, but the decisions on their contracts have been made while he was the owner. Jacob DeGrom and Pete Alonso have not been treated like family. That is true. That is true. 888-808-1019. We could do a little baseball as well. I want to get to the Saquon Barkley stuff and his sleep aid commercial. But, yeah, that's an interesting point. And as far as, like, who's, you know, we get hung up on caring about the Met and Yankee thing. I understand why we do it, but It doesn't matter who did better, Mets or Yankees. And you know, and to your point about the Yankees, I'll talk about it on the other side. Like, just because I'm saying the Yankees are a favorite to a favorite to get to the World Series because the American League is weak, that doesn't mean they wouldn't be the same exact thing if Juan Soto signed. And they would be. They still would be. They were there with Juan Soto. And I don't think, like, I like what they've done. I like how they've pivoted. We'll get into it a little bit more in the 4 o'clock hour and Yankee Hot Stove at 4 a.m. But I don't think that they're clearly better than they were last October. I don't. Juan Soto is an incredible player. You know, they've lost some offense. And their rotation's much better. Their bullpen's much better. But again, look at the World Series and look how many runs the Dodgers scored. The Yankees didn't get pounded by the Dodgers the way the Mets did. Now, the Mets won an extra game, but they lost because they couldn't control that offense. That's not why the Yankees lost. The Yankees controlled that offense other than Freddie Freeman. Ohtani got hurt, to be fair. But Ohtani was kind of not himself, but he didn't do anything in the series. Mookie Betts didn't do anything in the series. Teoscar Hernandez hit a couple home runs, but really, Freddie Freeman killed him. Other than that, the Yankees scored one less run. They didn't really, and the Yankees had a better batting average. The Dodgers really didn't do that much offensively. So, yeah, the pitching's better, but is it why they lost? They need to score more runs, and that's going to be tough without Juan Soto. I don't care what they do. And I still think now there's one more thing to do. 888-808-1019. We'll get into a little Pete Alonso, too, as there's another team that has emerged as a possible landing spot. A little bit of my Yankee epiphany. And still take your phone calls on Jets and Giants. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on The Fan.